Walking into that lobby felt like stepping into a cathedral of glass and curated silence. It was one of those top-tier London firms where the carpets are deep enough to swallow your heels and the receptionists are trained to look through you until they see your security pass. I'd earned my spot there. First-class degree, 3 years of grinding at a smaller firm, and a hunger that kept me at my desk long after the streetlights in Canary Wharf flickered to life. I was a British Nigerian woman in a sea of pinstripes and heritage names, and I knew I had to be twice as fast and half as loud just to be seen as equal. But within 6 months, everyone did know my name, not because of the million-pound merger I'd helped steer or the way I could dissect a contract until the loopholes bled. They knew my name because of a whisper that started in the break room and ended in the boardroom. It started with Marcus. Marcus was a senior partner, the kind of man who looked like he'd been born in a tuxedo and bred for leadership. He was brilliant, untouchable, and unfortunately for me, he took an interest in my career. It started professionally, a seat at the big table, an invitation to a high-stakes client dinner, a few late nights in his office refining a pitch. I saw it as mentorship. I saw it as the fast track I'd been working for since I was 18. The rest of the office saw something else. I noticed the shift at the coffee machine first. A group of associates, men I'd shared drinks with the week before, suddenly went silent when I walked in. They didn't look at my face. They looked at my clothes, their eyes tracing the line of my skirt with a new, ugly curiosity. Then came the jokes, small, jagged comments about how I managed to get so much one-on-one time with the man who held the keys to the kingdom. They couldn't wrap their heads around the idea that I was just better at the job than they were. It was easier, more comforting for their egos to believe I was using my body as a ladder. The rumor grew legs. Suddenly, I wasn't the girl who stayed late to finish the due diligence. I was the girl who stayed late to satisfy the boss. I'd walk down the corridor and feel the weight of 100 assumptions pressing against my back. Even the other women looked at me with a mix of pity and disdain, like I'd betrayed the sisterhood by taking a shortcut they assumed I'd been offered. The reality was far colder. Marcus hadn't even touched my hand, but he knew the rumors were swirling, and he didn't stop them. In fact, he leaned into them. He liked the idea that the office thought he'd tamed the ambitious newcomer. It added to his legend. When I finally confronted him, my voice trembling with a mix of rage and humiliation, he didn't apologize. He just leaned back in his leather chair, swirled his scotch, and told me to develop a thicker skin. He told me that in this world, visibility is visibility, and I should be grateful people were talking about me at all. That was the moment the glass shattered. I realized that to these people, I wasn't a professional. I wasn't even a person. I was a trope. I was a workplace entanglement designed to spice up their boring afternoons. They'd reduced my years of study, my sleepless nights, and my cultural pride down to a dirty secret that didn't even exist. I learned how fast power can strip a woman of her agency. I learned that once a rumor takes root in a workplace, the truth is just an inconvenience. I watched my reputation, the only thing I truly owned, be traded like a commodity by people who didn't even know my middle name. They knew my name all right, but they never knew me. And by the time I handed in my notice and walked out of those glass doors for the last time, I made sure they knew one more thing. I wasn't leaving because I'd lost. I was leaving because the air in that cathedral was too thin for anyone with a soul to breathe.